Good afternoon, welcome. This is the session called Why Be Well Behaved. And so I'll tell you why you should be in here, because it will be easier for us to hear one another and to talk, but we can define that in different ways. But the underlying theme for this session and the sessions that I will do this week is on congregation-based community organizing. So let me introduce myself. I think because we have so little time, we're not going to have a chance to hear all the names of everyone else in the room, but you'll see each other throughout your time here at Holden and hopefully can get acquainted that way. My name is Susan Eng, and I'm a pastor rostered in the ELCA, in the Minneapolis Area Synod. I did 16 years of parish ministry in the Minneapolis area. And then I did 4 years of a full-time community organizer in Minneapolis for a faith-based community organizing group called Isaiah. It still exists. Many of you may know of it because many of you are Minnesotans. And then about 4 years ago, I went to the national office of the ELCA, which is in the Chicago area. And I am now the program director for congregation-based organizing. So what is that? Congregation-based organizing is one of the ways that people of faith can express their faith in the public arena. In the ELCA, we're talking a lot these days about how to be a public church, and congregation-based organizing is one way to do that. Congregation-based organizing is along a continuum or in a circle of kinds of ways that we can respond to the world that God loves and to answer God's call to be in the world and to be God's agents in the world. Congregation-based organizing is not a way of doing relief, direct relief or services. That we do also in the church, and it's not a community development project where we have people help people pull themselves up from their own bootstraps and work together to make a better safety net, for example, for the things that are wrong in the world. Congregation-based organizing is concerned mostly with changing policies or practices in a given community that perpetuate injustices. So, for example, a community organization like the one I was a part of might be working on creating more opportunity for affordable housing in a community by perhaps demanding of its city council that they have certain number of affordable units in any given housing development that's going up. Or they might work on issues of transportation so that we have a variety of ways for people to get around in a community and for all people to be able to have access to that kind of transportation. Or a congregation might work on getting a stop sign down on the corner near their church because there's been a lot of incidents with children either getting hit or being in danger. So congregation-based organizing runs the gamut of a lot of different kinds of issues, but generally speaking, it's trying to change the systems or get at root causes of the inequities and injustices in our communities. Congregations get involved in this work for that purpose, and also many of the ways that we do that work in the world also have kickback or good results in congregations as well. So a lot of churches that get involved in this kind of work find that their leadership pool grows, or the leaders they have become more bold or more experimental, more willing to try some new things. Or they find that young people are interested in their church because their church is really interested in the community and interested in being partners in making a more just community around them. So I like to sometimes talk about congregation-based organizing as two prongs. One is that work out in the world, being a public church, and the other is the work in our congregations to make them vital places for us to be nurtured in God's word. My job is to go around the country and consult with Lutherans who are interested in doing that and help them figure out how to get into that work, what the different organizations are that do that work around the country or in their community, And I do quite a bit of introductory training to the work, as well as connecting them to these networks of organizations that invite congregations into the work. Probably raises more as many questions as it answers, but that's the set of things that I'm going to be exploring with folks in the 5 days that I'm here at Holden. Today, what I'd like to do with you is to look at some of the roots of our faith tradition, our biblical roots, and I named this Why Be Well Behaved, because of, maybe you're familiar with that expression, well-behaved women rarely or seldom make history. And it's a favorite quote of mine, and I don't think it means that we're supposed to just go off and be wild in the world, but that being well-behaved sometimes just keeps things the way they are, keeps things status quo, and the way things are, quite often, I believe, are not the way God wants them to be. And we need sometimes to break out of our comfort zones in order to be agents and partners with God in the world to create greater justice. So what I'm going to invite you to do, and this is my style of presenting, is not presenting so much as working with you. So I have a list of, I think, 14 Bible passages up here. And I'm going to give us about 10 minutes, and everybody's going to choose one of these and look it up and start reading about what's in there. And I'm not telling you up here who these people are that you're going to be reading about. You'll find that out as you go. And after you've all had some time to study from the scriptures that account, then we're going to do some sharing and look at how these people broke out of their comfort zones or the comfort zones that others imposed upon them in order to do some new things in the world and do some things that maybe God was calling them to do on God's behalf. So let me make sure I've covered what I want to. Yeah. So the way I'd like to do this, we're not going to get to talk about all of them, but I just have such a hard time narrowing it down any more than this. So you'll at least, you know, after the session, if we haven't heard about all of these people, maybe you can share with someone the one that you didn't get to talk about. The way I'd like to propose is if you would be willing, after you've read to yourself the account that you choose, if you would be willing to share with us either by depicting that person, you know, I am so-and-so, and I did this, that would be wonderful. If that's too far out of your comfort zone, then you can briefly tell us about that character. And I'll do some helps with you along either way. And then, since there's only 14 up here and more of you than 14, there will be some repeats so people can help each other out if that was your same one. So what I'd like to suggest, you may have already picked. So if you've already picked, go for it. But if some of you haven't picked yet, let me just get a show of hands of maybe, how many are we? 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, 16, 18, 20, 22, 24, 26. We've got about 28 people, so we can do 2 people on each. Let's see if I can get 2 people who'd be willing to look up Exodus 1, 8 to 21. Want to just raise your hand if that's one that you'd be willing to do. Exodus, all right, let me take these 2 right here. One in front and one in back, and that's yours. Okay, if you've already picked it, get your hand up quick. Exodus 3, 1 to 15, and 4, 1 to 17, those 2, okay? You can start reading, go right for it. And basically on your own, I don't expect you to get together with that other person. Exodus, a whole chapter 18, 2 people would be willing to do that one? Okay, right here and right here, good. Numbers 27, 1 to 11, 2 people? It's a great one. 1, 2. Okay, back in the back. Okay. Joshua 2, 1 to 21. We got one here and one here. Okay. 1 Kings 22, 1 to 28. One back here, and I'll take you right here. Okay. Nehemiah 1 and 2. One there and one there. Great. Esther chapter 3, 1 through 6, and chapter 4. One here and one here. Great. Okay, John, now we're in the New Testament. John 4, 1 to 42. Here and back here, okay. Acts 5, 17 to 42. And here and one here. Great. Acts 8, 26 to 40, here and back here. Acts 10, 1 through 11, 4. Who's not had an assignment yet? Okay, one here. Anybody else? Actually, looks like we're running out. Anybody else? Acts 16, 11 to 15, and verse 40. Anybody not have an assignment yet? Oh, I'm going to have to take these last two. Everybody's got an assignment.
I'll switch.
Okay, why don't you take this one? I don't know. Did this one get given out? X10? I think so. And then anybody who was doubled up want to switch over to Acts chapter 18? Okay, great. And that's all three of these references. They're fairly short. Acts 18 plus 24 to 28 and Romans 16. All right, so take time now to just to read on your own and get a sense of the story. And read it a couple times and be ready to tell us what you can, either in the persona of one of the characters or just ready to share a little bit about it. Any questions? Is it clear what we're doing? All right, go for it. got about two more minutes to kind of get in your craw. What your story's about, and in some way, perhaps willing to share it. So about two more minutes. All right, I'm going to interrupt you and do one brief introductory thing before we hear some of these stories. I've put on the flip chart over here some of the words that are hallmarks or characteristics of congregation-based community organizing. And what I, besides our hearing a little bit about how these people that we're going to read or hear about, how they went outside their comfort zone or the comfort zone that their society placed upon them, we're also going to just maybe throw out some of the things that we noticed in those stories that correspond to these ideas that come into play in community organizing. And as I tested this out myself, it was hard not to find almost all of them in almost all the stories, but that'll be one of the things. That's not your responsibility as the one who's telling us the story, but the rest of us are going to kind of notice those things and pull them out as we analyze it afterwards. So what I'd like to suggest is going to be hard. We're only going to get to about half of these stories, unless really fast, but I figured about 5 minutes on, so we'll get to about seven of the stories, and that means that seven of them are out there for you all to explore together beyond today. So let's just, somebody who's willing, you don't have to go in order here, somebody who's willing, tell us how you want to do this.
I'm going to role play two of the folks.
Okay.
One is a leader who is also an attorney, and he's pleading a case.
Okay. All right. So go for it. And if you can't hear, move closer, whatever.
Okay. God, I'd like to come before you to present a problem that I have found. Some young women came to me, and they said that their father had died in the wilderness and that his inheritance was going to go to other people. We don't think it's fair that this should happen. We are the children of this man who died, but we're women, and women have no rights. We think that we should have the rights to the inheritance of our father. Now, what do you say, God? God says, they're right. Give them the rights.
All right. Now, do you want to tell?
Who was I?
Yeah.
Esther.
Was that Caleb?
No.
All right. There's five of them, and we do hear all their names, but we also hear this really strange name of their father.
Okay.
These are the, do you want to tell us?
Sure. These are the daughters of Zelophehad.
The daughters of Zelophehad.
Zelophehad. I had an extra D.
Yeah.
And the attorney was Moses.
Yep. I always just like to go by the daughters of Z because Zelophehad is dead, out of the picture, and his five daughters are pleading for their case in front of Moses.
But it's interesting. The daughters pleaded for an inheritance along with the brothers. God said they should have the inheritance.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep.
God said the brothers should have the inheritance?
No, said that the daughters should have the inheritance.
And it's not their brothers that are also pleading. It's all the brothers of all the other tribes that are pleading.
Right.
But there are no brothers in this family.
Yeah.
There are only daughters. And the father has died, and the daughters decide that it's not going to be fair if they don't get any land. So they go and stand in line with all the other men and plead their case. And Moses goes to God, and God says, give them the land.
But what's also interesting is that the daughters appeared before an all-male group.
That's right. That's right. It's actually the first, I've read anyway, that's the first recorded historical time where women own property. So what do you hear in that story from what we've heard, how it's told, any of these characteristics of what these women were up to?
Courage.
All right.
Justice.
Public meetings.
Justice.
Risk-taking.
Risk-taking, okay. Mm-hmm.
Money.
Yeah.
The inheritance.
In those days, that was as much concern as money. Yep, would be land. Yep, somebody else said.
Self-interest.
They're concerned about whether they were going to be met, their interests were going to be met. Yeah.
Justice. Well, it was also to carry on the father's name.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. That was their self-interest as well. Mm-hmm. Good. So these women stepped outside of the bounds of society's comfort zone in order to get what was rightly theirs. But it had not happened before in that way. All right. Boy, that 5 minutes goes quick. Especially that's one of my favorite stories in all Scripture. Okay.
What was the passage for that?
That was Numbers 27, 1 to 11. Yeah. All right. Who wants to go next? Yes.
Should I tell?
You can do it however you like. You can.
Okay, this is Exodus 18, and I think this is about prevention of burnout and delegation, which actually maybe belong on your list.
Okay.
So this is after the Exodus, and Moses meets up with his father-in-law, Jethro, who is, remind everybody, a priest of Midian. And Jethro observes that a lot of people come before Moses to be judged, and Moses is doing it all himself. And he says, and this translation is wonderful, he says, what you're doing is not good. You will surely wear yourself out. And so he makes a suggestion for creating a hierarchy of judges that will work with units of people in greater numbers, and they will deal with minor cases, whereas the most troubling cases or most important cases will be brought before Moses. And what he suggests Moses do are three things. One is he should represent the people before God. Second, he should teach them the statutes and instructions so that they have an idea of what is right and what they should do. That will put them ahead of where they were. Mm-hmm. And then he creates this hierarchy of judges.
Good. All right. Is that a somewhat familiar story to other folks? And the other person who was reading it, was there anything to add?
I moved on to something.
Oh, okay. So I heard a couple things. You said delegate, learning how to delegate authority a bit. I also heard some mentoring going on of Jethro to his son-in-law, and also his son-in-law to the others that would act as judges. What else did you catch in that story that's either up here or remarkable otherwise?
I'd say leadership development.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Power analysis.
A power analysis. Okay, say more about say more about that.
Jethro is analyzing this as an outsider and seeing the flaws in it.
Yes. Yes, power analysis, and these aren't always the same thing, but also evaluation. Mm-hmm. Anything else that you notice about that, either that's up there or not, that's of note? How about that whole idea now of risk-taking or outside one's comfort zone or doing something different? How did that come into play?
Well, any time the leader gives up some of his authority. There's risk-taking involved in that.
That's right. Isn't that right? Great. How about Jethro? Any kind of courage or misbehaving going on there?
Well, Moses had a direct route to God, yeah. And Jethro comes in and says, Moses, you're not doing this right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so kind of puts himself in the place of God. Moses hadn't heard that from God yet, but this maybe was the way God was going to let Moses know. Mm-hmm. All right. Great. Let's do another one. Who wants to share? Back here.
Well, I'm Pharaoh. And these Israelites are getting to be so many that I'm afraid they're going to uprise someday. So we got to make them work so hard they wouldn't have the strength to rebel. But that didn't work either. There's still getting to be so many of them. I told those Hebrew midwives that every boy that's born, they've got to kill him, but the girls can live. But those uppity women aren't doing that. Boys are still getting born. So they tell me that the Hebrew women are so strong that the kids are born before they can even get there. So I got to tell my whole Egyptian people, anytime you see a Hebrew boy, you got to throw him in the river, let him drown.
Now, will you name those two midwives for us? Tricky names, but we want to hear it.
Shiphrah and Puah.
I actually circled the wrong one the first time. This is this first one up here, right? Exodus 1?
Yeah.
Shiphrah and Puah. Midwives who connive to fool him into thinking that they can't get there fast enough to kill those babies. So at least for a while, the death of the firstborn is staved off. So what about these two women? What were they doing in terms of being not well behaved?
Committing civil disobedience.
Committing civil disobedience. Yeah.
And lying about it.
And lying about it. Okay, what else do you hear going on in there?
It took a lot of courage to do that.
Uh-huh.
But it was just, so you could throw in justice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Interesting way to define power for them.
Yeah.
You know,
They didn't have much power, right? But
that risk taking allowed them to examine something they really didn't have. They weren't allowed to have.
And yet they exercised some power, though, didn't they?
Yeah, just to stand up and say this is what I feel. Yeah. What's that like for the first time, though?
Yeah. And they used the power they had in a very clever way.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. They did an analysis. I mean, we don't read it, but they did an analysis of, well, what can we do in our situation? At least on our watch, these children aren't going to be killed, and we're not going to be the ones to do it. I also hear some self-interest in there, actually, because this was their livelihood. Now, women and anyone who becomes a midwife or a person who becomes a delivering babies, must have a real interest in that, and this is what they care about. Yeah?
There was an interesting aspect in that reading in that as a reward, they were allowed to have families also.
That's right. That's right.
I never realized that.
Yeah. That was God's reward.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, anything else about that story? Again, very early in history, a sense of that civil disobedience and sort of acting where you're able to act. And let's do another one. Back here, yes.
So we had, this is three, or the one in between.
Okay.
And it's about... Moses going out and the whole burning bush story.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that struck me was that he was very self-interested. He covered all his bases. He made sure he didn't have to speak. He made sure that they would believe him. And then kept pushing. So not only did he want the name, he wanted some way to prove it so that we get the whole staff turned into a snake. And and he actually kept pushing and pushing and pushing until God got angry and snapped at him.
Yeah.
He said, well, your brother could do this. So.
Good. So comfort zone issues, what about that? Anybody? For Moses. I mean, his the whole thing is about him trying to say, I'm not comfortable with this God, right? What else do you see up here in the Moses story?
Kind of a strategy on his part to pass the buck.
Yeah, he has a strategy for how he was going to, if he wasn't going to get out of it, he was at least going to have his back up.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. There's certainly a leadership development thing going on here, right?
To say the least.
Yeah, with them insisting that it's not for him, and yet God keeps giving him the tools and the partners and the word.
Mm-hmm. And gave him a crazy task.
Uh-huh.
Because here were two guys who were going to take on the most powerful ruler in the world with the world's largest army. And they were going to say, let my people go. And the people were building, the Hebrews were building the Pharaoh's pyramid. And for him to let them go, I mean, they were a tremendous financial asset that Pharaoh was going to give up.
Mm-hmm.
And they go, and who's going to build his pyramid? I mean, this the Lord gave Moses and Aaron a task that on the face of it must have seemed not only impossible, but ridiculous.
So one concept out of the world of community organizing that I'm hearing, just because it rings in my head, is community organizing walks a fine line between the world as it is,
mm-hmm,
and the world as it should be. And we're not trying to say that we should only live in this world, the world as it should be, because sometimes some of us do. We live in the world as it should be, and therefore we're not really grounded in the awful realities around us. There's a pull towards the world as it should be, but we live in the world as it is. And so some of this, and some of what people have a hard time with around community organizing, is they're very idealistic. Well, we wouldn't behave that way. We shouldn't hold people to account. That's awkward. That's discomforting. And yet, in order to get closer to the world as it should be, we're going to have to do some walking in this world as well.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's part of what I heard him
saying. Yeah, and the glue that holds that together, that had to hold that together on part of Moses and Aaron was trust.
Oh.
I mean, the amount of the gift of faith that they needed. Because another thing to think about, you know, both of them, by going back to Egypt, were subject to execution.
Mm.
Moses was an escaped felon, and Aaron was now a fugitive slave.
Sure, sure. So lots of these dynamics going on. Let's do another. Yes, go for it. Your being here with us partly inspired me to say we should do a little acting. So
thank you. Adonai, save us, save my people, the Jews. Thank you for sending my daughter, my sweet daughter Esther, queen of Persia. Oh, such a child, such a wonderful child. So young to be queen, only 14 years old. Oh, but thank you, Adonai. Thank you for giving her such great wisdom. I sent her word that she should not expect to be spared.
All us Jews are under condemnation. We are all to be slaughtered. And Haman is no fool. He would discover that she is a Jew and she too would be slaughtered. So I told her, think of yourself as already dead. Think of it because she was frightened to go in the throne room. Terrified because she knew if she walked into the throne room unsummoned that she would be beheaded within 5 minutes. What a terrible, terrible place for her to be in. And yet, Lord, you, with your spirit, you spoke to her spirit, and you inspired her to call for a 3-day fast, a total fast, no food, no water, for all the Jews, first in Susa, and then throughout the Persian Empire, that we should all fast and pray for her safety, for her deliverance. So now it is the 3rd day. It is time for her to go in the throne room. Give her courage, give her trust, give her power, and may her husband, that terrible king, may he indeed hold out his scepter and deliver her from death. And so may she persuade the king and to deal with Haman and to give us all salvation from this pending death. Ah, yes, Lord, we trust in you. Amen.
All right, who was he? Mordecai. Question, we're not entirely sure what the relationship was, but cousin, but a father figure.
No age.
What's that? No age. Thank you. So,
and I did something that was terribly unscriptural.
Okay.
Does anybody know what it is?
Oh, yes.
The name, I don't know.
Yes. Well, no, what's unscriptural about that?
What did you do?
God isn't mentioned in Esther in any form.
The Lord is never mentioned in the book of Esther.
Right.
I mean, it's clear that they're thinking of the Lord, but they never mention him.
So we had this gentleman depicting Mordecai, who had an incredibly huge role to play in this story. And Esther is also a character, as we hear. So the rest of us, what do we hear in that story? That's community organizing, and that's risk taking and putting someone outside their comfort zone. What do you remember, or what did you hear?
He had a strategy.
Okay.
Trying to get Esther to go.
Yep, definite strategy. Mm-hmm.
Relationship.
Mordecai and Esther had an important relationship. Esther had an important relationship to the king. So there was this leveraging of relationships. Mm-hmm. What else was going on there? And again, you know, don't depend so much on this, but just kind of analyze what was going on there that was outside of someone's comfort zone and yet in God's realm. Justice. If we think back on the story, the reason that the people were going to be killed, all the Jews too were going to be killed, was simply because they wouldn't bow down to Haman, to a man. So that was an unjust decision.
But it all turned out.
Well, it all turned out for the Jews.
Not for Haman
and not for those who were going to kill them. But we won't go into all that. Let's just stick
ultimately,
with the story.
There was some people power in that.
There was some people power. And Esther called upon the people to pray for her, to go into sackcloth and ashes and wait out the 3 days prior to what she was going to do. So she was putting that to work.
Mm-hmm. For a young woman, how much courage that would have taken.
Mordecai appealed to her self-interest. At first, she didn't want to do it. She said, no, it's not for me. And he made it clear that it wasn't just going to be your people that would be killed, but they'll find out you're a Jew, and you'll get killed too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think the fact that Esther remembers that the people need to support her is important. Mm-hmm. This is not a quixotic action mm-hmm. by a rash person. Mm-hmm. She is in relationship mm-hmm. with her constituency.
So the relationships are more than just one-on-one-on-one, but there's this sense of a community. A community in together and collaborative activity. Mm-hmm. Okay. Great story. All right, let's do another one. Who wants to share in some way?
I can tell what. My brother and I were sent by our dad to Jericho to just check it out because there was a chance we could take over some more area. But when we got there, the situation wasn't so good, so we immediately had to hide. And the most convenient place to hide was the home of a prostitute. I don't know how we found that, but we did.
Red light. Yeah.
But the government did know we were there, so they came looking for us. And maybe unbeknownst to us, that we had some collaborators right there immediately. The woman who ran the House of Prostitution hit us. And when the soldiers came looking for us, she sent them off on a wild goose chase. And then she got us off the roof where she put us, and then she made a deal with us. That if she knew how strong my father's powers were at that point, and she made a deal and said if I let you go, no, if I help you out now, so I want you to help me out. So when you come and take over our area, remember me. And so we told her, okay, you take this little red ribbon and tie it on your door, and when we come in, we'll see that red ribbon. Give it to those who would be helpful. And we'll pass your houses up and, mm-hmm. In the process. Mm-hmm. So.
And what's the woman's name?
Rahab.
Rahab.
Okay.
And just not really part of what we're talking about today, but there are a lot of questions about whether prostitute, and I know that's what the Bible said in the version you're reading, but there's a lot of questions about whether or not that was a house of prostitution.
I should have read it in the Good News from Modern Man. Maybe it came out.
But just to put that out there, that we shouldn't necessarily assume that some innkeeper is also one of the ways that's been translated, and but that it would have been a woman, it would have been a very questionable thing for a woman to do. So, prostitute innkeeper kind of becomes interchangeable. But be that as it may, we have Rahab and the spies from.
Joshua's two sons.
Mm-hmm. So there was some risk taking, some going out of comfort zones on whose part? Who might you say would be some of the major? Who was the major player? Maybe even though we heard it, I'm giving it away, aren't I? We heard it from the voice of the spies, but it seems to me that Rahab is a key mm-hmm. character
yeah.
here.
Yeah.
So what about comfort zones and risk taking and so on?
Well, she was being a traitor.
Yeah. Traitor to her own. Mm-hmm.
Which
okay.
courage.
Courage.
A lot of courage.
Yep.
Collaboration.
Collaboration with these questionable folks.
Well, yeah. I would think the spies were a lot of their comfort zone, too.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep,
well,
that's
well,
right.
Well, Rahab, she said, we've heard of the drying up of the sea, and we heard of the death of these two kings,
mm-hmm.
and we're petrified of you guys.
Mm-hmm.
So she was operating from
some self-interest, right? She had to kind of weigh different self-interests. I get in trouble for my government for what I'm doing, but boy, it looks like you've got a pretty powerful guy.
Yeah, my government's going to go because these guys are invincible.
Yeah.
She's back in a winner.
She's back in a winner. Yep.
And if they didn't make it through the walls, then who knows? It's just a red ribbon on the door. That's true.
That's right.
So she was covering all the faces.
Yeah. We didn't have you read that part, but later it does come back and she gets gets saved from that destruction. And in fact, she's one of the few names that comes in the genealogy of Jesus.
Yes.
She's the great-great-great-grandmother or someone of King David. And so she gets actually mentioned in the New Testament as well. Let's do the bell, by the way, was it's dinner starting, but we've got till 5, so I hope you'll hang in there. Let's do another one. Yes.
My name is Micaiah. I live in Israel. I live back in the time of King Ahab, who I tell you was the worst king we ever had. He especially did not like prophets of the Lord who spoke the truth. He had them killed. And he had all these his own prophets. I called them tame prophets because they would work themselves up into a lather and do all sorts of extraordinary theatrics, but they always ended up telling the king exactly what he wanted to hear. Especially the main one of them, this guy that's real, well, I was going to say a word, but I won't. This real incredible guy named Zedekiah, who... he was the leader of them, and he was really bad at doing what the king wanted. Well, anyway, the neighboring king from the next kingdom, Jehoshaphat, he came up to visit our king, King Ahab, and that's when King Ahab thought that he could invade our neighbor and take away one of the cities, one of the border cities that Ahab felt should belong to him. And he convinced Jehoshaphat to jump into the fight with him. And Jehoshaphat, though, was a little bit more concerned about what the Lord thought than Ahab was. So Jehoshaphat said, well, do you have any prophets? And out came all the tame prophets, and they did their big show. And it was just pretty obvious, really clear to anybody that this was just a show. And so Jehoshaphat then said, well, don't you have anybody who really is a prophet? And I guess what I hear is that Ahab said, well, there is Micaiah. And so they brought me in, and I knew right away it was trouble, because Ahab didn't like me, and so he told me what they were planning on doing, and said, is this a good idea or not? And so I said, yeah, it's a good idea. Go ahead and do it, and you'll win. And he could tell that I was not serious. So he said, no, I order you now, tell me what you really think. And I think he only did that because Jehoshaphat was sitting right next to him. So I told him what I'd seen, which was the armies of Israel all slaughtered on a mountain. And that's when Zedekiah got a little upset. And that's when the vision came to me, and I saw a lying spirit sent out by God to get inside all these guys. So it was bad enough that I had told them what I saw was going to happen, which wasn't really good for Ahab and his plans. But then I had to go and put my foot in my mouth and tell them the truth that all these prophets are just a bunch of liars, that they've got an evil lying spirit inside them, and that God must have sent it to them because God wants to destroy Ahab. And that only got Ahab upset, but it got Zedekiah pretty upset. He came over and he knocked me down on the ground. And, well, he said, where did the spirit from the Lord go as I hit you? And I didn't know what to say, and I said, well, you know, after all this happens, you'll know. And Ahab said, yeah, well, we'll know. But right now, you're going into prison, and all you're going to have is bread and water until we come back in victory and peace. And I didn't see any point in anything to lose then, so I just told him, well, that's not going to happen. So I died in prison.
All right, thank you. So Micaiah, against what all the other prophets were saying, what everyone wanted to hear, and told the truth. Okay, so maybe we're at the point now where it's almost pointless to ask, was there any risk-taking involved here? Was this a well-behaved prophet?
Well, he had a reputation already of being a troublemaker.
Yeah, that's true. But something about that made it clear that if we wanted to hear a different word, maybe we ought to go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't see everything on your list. Do you have speaking truth to power?
No, I've left that one off, but I think it's about power, but also speaking truth to power. Kind of an overused phrase, but it's a good one. And he didn't, he was right. The king was killed and that battle they lost. And we don't really know anything more. We don't hear any more about him, but he probably died in prison. Yeah. I think we have time for one more. Who wants to do another one? Anybody? Got several left. We've been in the Old Testament. That's interesting. We just stayed there. Anybody want to do one of the New Testament ones? Well, let's hear the... Yes, please.
Priscilla and Aquila.
Okay. And that's this one here.
Yes.
Go ahead. Tell us about that, or however you want to do it.
Well, there isn't a whole lot. It seems they met Paul. They were Jews. They were a Jewish couple. And they met Paul in Corinth and then traveled with Paul. The best thing is the Romans 16, where it talks about they stuck their necks out for Paul. And there's also a reference to somebody else was preaching and speaking and had a great deal of power and energy to what they were saying. But the two of them took that person aside and clarified the story.
Mm-hmm.
So that he was then able to go on and preach and teach more accurately.
Right, right. So Paul often talks in his letters about Priscilla and Aquila. He always puts Priscilla's name first,
uh-huh.
which I think is interesting. And he thinks about them as his partners, his collaborators. I think that's up here somewhere.
Collaborators,
right? And I heard you talking about there was some leadership development and mentoring going on with
yes.
Apollos,
uh-huh.
the other one. I picked this story in part because of the way that especially Priscilla is depicted as an equal partner with
yes.
Paul and her husband, both in the tent making
mm-hmm.
and in the preaching and teaching of the gospel. So that they didn't seem uncomfortable with it, but what we know about that time in the history would have been pretty unusual, I think. Yeah.
Also nice that she and her husband worked together.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They were delegating, for sure.
They would.
Yeah,
that's true. That's
yeah.
true. They didn't tell Apollos, stop teaching, let us do it.
Yeah.
They took him aside, they helped him to do it right. And then it goes on to say he became one of the most powerful and influential teachers at Apollos once they helped him figure it out. So with the last few minutes we've got left, let's just hear the names of each of these characters we didn't. So this story was about who? Nehemiah, okay. Nehemiah, who goes and tries to rebuild some things in his hometown back in Jerusalem, okay? This story, we had this one.
Mary at the well.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Mary at the well, or a woman at the well, a Samaritan woman.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
A woman
and
without power who discovered for me that the power that society told her was totally different than the one she just discovered at the well.
All right. Good. This one, Acts 5.
Peter.
What was that about?
Peter.
Okay, and what was Peter up to, just quickly?
Well, he was the one that said, don't mess with this because it's God who opened the prison.
Right, so Peter's in prison, and actually there's a name in here, Gamaliel, right?
Yeah, Gamaliel.
Yes, there's a Pharisee who acts way out of line with what we understand Pharisees to do. He said, if this is of God, this movement of Jesus, then it will last no matter what you do. If it's not, it will go away. Yeah. Okay, so I like to call him the kinder, gentler Pharisee. What about the Acts 8 one? Who had that one? Yeah, who was that about?
Philip.
Ah, what was Philip up to in that story?
Well, he was getting led quite, just pushed right along to come up to the Ethiopian and continue to answer the Ethiopian's questions. Mm-hmm. I think if the Ethiopian hadn't asked questions, I don't know what Philip would have done.
Mm-hmm. There's all kinds of implications about outside of one's comfort zone, outside of who we thought we were supposed to be teaching the gospel to, and who's acceptable in God's sight. Acts 10, what was that about? Yeah.
Peter, and reaching out to the Gentiles, and he was really called on the carpet by the people back in Jerusalem.
That's right. He had to explain. He had some explaining to do about why he would do that.
He started with... Was it Cornelius and Caesarea?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Good.
Neat that you used the word carpet, because that was his revelation.
Well, and he saw the...
Oh, that's right.
With all the animals that were, they said were unclean. And God says, if I say they're clean, who are you to say they're unclean?
It's a great children's sermon. God did a children's sermon with him. It did an object lesson. Okay, here's all these unclean animals. Now, think about that. How is that like these Gentiles? And the last one that we didn't get to, Acts 16, what was that? Who was that about?
That was about Lydia.
Okay, and Lydia was literally outside.
Purple.
Go ahead.
Purple cloth.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow she was listening to Paul, and then she had her whole household baptized, and she invited them to come to their home. I don't quite see how it applies to the...
First of all, she's a businesswoman. Okay, she's organizing people to pray outside the temple, outside the appropriate places to pray along the riverside. So that's part of why I put her in there. She seems to be an organizer, and she also prevails upon the official Paul and all the others to come and stay with her and to baptize her family, and her house becomes a kind of safe house.
She's a real rebel.
Yeah.
Much so.
Yeah. So with the half a minute left to go, what I want to suggest to us all is back to our concept of why be well-behaved. Whether it applies to doing work in community organizing, whether it applies to how you want to live your life in your faith in the public arena or in your private arena, it seems to me that we've got good examples in Scripture, and we didn't even go into the rest of history, about how if many people who decide to act outside the comfort zone and take some risks on God's behalf end up being agents of God's will in the world, and agents of change, and doers of justice. So I would walk away this evening asking myself, how willing am I to go outside my comfort zone for the sake of God's justice in the world? And invite you to think about that same question yourselves. And if you'd like to come back tomorrow, I don't know what time I'm on. I think it's in the morning, but
late morning,
10:50. We'll go into some more community organizing tools. How do we do that without just getting our necks cut off? Thank you all for your great participation.
You're going to leave these here?
I'll
take them?
Actually, I'm not going to use them again, I don't think so.
Where do you